Everybody, for bearing with me through a couple of sermons today. We've got one more left. We're talking about the last seasons of life, I guess you could say. Each cross-section of life has got a little bit longer through these lessons. We've started out by talking about just the teenage years, which is really just 4 or 5 years. Then we talked about somebody going into college, but also your 20s and 30s. So you got a couple decades there. Now we're going to talk about everybody else, which is 40 years old and older, what you might call middle-aged. In Luke chapter 1, the angel Gabriel told Zacharias that he and his wife would have a child. Zacharias was understandably skeptical. And why is that? He was an old man. Listen to how he says it. He says, "How shall I know this? For I am an old man, and my wife is well advanced in years." That's a smart guy, isn't it? He calls himself old, but he calls his wife advanced in years. I'm going to remember that later. Kind of makes it sound like a special achievement. Makes it sound desirable. I was a little disappointed to find out, because I looked into this. I wondered, is he really being clever, or what's going on there? I looked into this, and he was not being clever. That was just a figure of speech that the Jews would use to describe both men and women, although I still recommend it. And getting old is desirable, isn't it? It's not exactly a special achievement, but it is desirable, and it is a special blessing from God, because not everybody gets old. I heard one gray-haired man say to another, "Happy birthday, man, you're getting old." The man replied, "That's the idea, isn't it? Sure beats the alternative." And I thought that was a pretty interesting perspective on life. Getting old is desirable because the alternative is less desirable. Throughout my lesson today, I may say things like old people or older people. I don't mean that in a derogatory sense, just so you know. I want to make that very clear from the outset. I don't mean that in a derogatory way. If I start talking about old people during my lesson, I do mean that in a respectful way. If I talk about old men and old women, again, I don't mean that in a disrespectful way. I also need to say from the outset that I have the least experience. I'm happy to say I have the least experience in this phase of life. I told you I'm 37 years old, so technically I don't have any experience in this phase of life. So if I'm going through the lesson today and you feel like I don't know what I'm talking about, you might be right. And that's okay, because I can't speak from experience. All I can speak from here is observation, and then of course reading the Bible and drawing some conclusions from that. But even though I'm not middle-aged yet, all signs are pointing to the fact that I might be close. Nobody calls me old man, or nobody calls me young man anymore. For a long time in life, people would refer to me as a young man. Nobody says that anymore. Another sign is I've been wearing the same style tennis shoes for the last 6 years. I've heard that's another sign of getting middle-aged. And I like when people buy me socks for my birthday. So all those are the signs. So I've heard. I want to start out with challenges. We're not going to talk about choices, and it's not because there aren't any choices, but when you're at this phase of life, the big choices are behind you. I mean, there's plenty of choices to make, but the big ones are behind you. And so really, the choice that you have to make as you get into the fall and winter of life is to handle some challenges in the right way. Transitioning into later adulthood, again, we're talking about 40 years old all the way to the end of life. As you are going through this phase of life, it does introduce a new set of challenges. And just like every other phase of life, there's a lot of happy things, there's a lot of joyful things, but there's also some hard things about becoming middle-aged, for example. When you are going into the middle age of life, the enthusiasm of youth is fading away, and the seriousness of life is unavoidable. I told you earlier that I already feel this a little bit. I feel the seriousness of life because there's so many enormous, very consequential things that you have to wade through once you get to this phase of life. You're also very busy in this phase of life. You're busy at work, you're busy at church, you're busy at home, you're busy with your kids. Also in this phase of life, you might be raising teenage children, escorting them through their own struggles in life. And all of this leads to new conflicts with your husband and wife that maybe you'd never had before. as you sort through these difficulties. But once you get through the middle age of life, life carries on, some of those struggles subside, and then you face new challenges. Your kids grow up, they move out, and you have an empty nest. You've heard of empty nest syndrome? Well, the reason people talk about it is because that's a real thing. It's a real thing to have no kids in the home anymore after maybe 30 years or more of raising children. I've heard that at this phase in life, some people can start to struggle with feeling purpose in their life. You realize at this phase in life that you hardly know your husband or wife because you've been so focused on child rearing. And then, once you get through that part of life, you've sort of regrouped emotionally, regrouped financially, you've established some new routines in life, and just once you get all that figured out, then your check engine light comes on. But not like the check engine light on your car, or the check engine light on your body comes on and pretty much stays on the rest of your life. So I'm going to talk about some of the specific challenges that face people as they're going through middle age and older. So here's one challenge. Older people tend to have very well-established habits and deeply ingrained opinions. Is that good or bad? Yes, that's right. It can be good or it can be bad. These habits and opinions that you have as an older person have developed over a lifetime. There's a reason that you have those habits and opinions. But these habits and opinions can become so embedded in a person's daily routine that you might not even recognize that you have these habits and opinions. So again, is that good or bad? It can be good if you're talking about prayer and Bible study, but it's not good if we're talking about sin. Lifelong biases can start to feel like absolute, unnegotiable truth. And what can happen, as a person gets older, stubbornness gets disguised as conviction. A person thinks they're convicted, but really they're just being stubborn. You see what I mean by that? Many older people can become bitterly averse to any kind of change. And I'm not even that old, but I feel that a little bit. For example, I'm sort of in between when it comes to technology. I didn't exactly grow up with technology, but by the time I got into high school and college, technology was a really big thing. But even sort of being in between there, I still kind of hate technology. I hate when I have to get a new phone. I hate when I have to get a new computer. It annoys me why they have to change things. If you're an older person, you don't have to raise your hand, but I know you feel that. Younger people don't seem to feel that way, because they've grown up with it their entire lives. It's just very intuitive to them. But the main point is, what I'm saying, is that older people tend to become very averse to change. And I can understand why. But this can be a very dangerous attitude at any stage of life. I've heard many older people say, well, you're not going to change my mind about that. Is that a good attitude or a bad attitude? Well, once again, it kind of depends, doesn't it? That's great if you're right, but it's not great if you aren't right. It's very possible that you may need to change your mind about some things. You know, we in our culture, we've got sayings about stubborn old mules, and the Bible does too. I think that's where it started. Psalm 32, verse 9, David said, "Do not be like the horse or like the mule, which have no understanding, which must be harnessed with bit and bridle, else they not come near to you." So the main point is very simple here. It's very natural as a person gets older to have these well-developed opinions, deeply ingrained habits, but we have to be aware of them, especially if they're not healthy. Because conviction is a virtue, but stubbornness is not a virtue. And as we evaluate ourselves, we have to be able to tell the difference. Am I being convicted? Am I grounded on what's right? Or am I just being stubborn? Another thing that many older people tend to struggle with, this is a big one, is regret. Many older people struggle with regret. And I think that's because it's only when your hair starts to gray, or maybe just goes away, that you have the wisdom to recognize the magnitude of your past failures. Does that make sense? You know, when you're young, you do a lot of dumb things, and you don't really realize how dumb they were and the consequences of those decisions until much later in life. And this is why many old people struggle with regret, because it hurts them to look back at life wishing that you'd known then what you know now. For example, I don't know how many times I have heard older people express this one regret. This is the one I hear more than anything else. It's when older people say, "I wish I would have spent more time with my kids." Anybody ever heard that regret expressed before? I've heard it many times. And you know what? I'm glad people say it to me. The reason they say it to me is they're trying to protect me from their own failures that they made in their life. So I respect that. I'm sorry they went through it, but I'm glad they were willing to share that wisdom with me. And what I also find interesting about this, one of the last times I heard somebody say this to me was a guy who was in his 40s, almost 50. And it was interesting to hear him say this to me because he was somebody who spent a lot of time with his kids. But what do you think was the problem? He spent a lot of time with his kids, but it wasn't the right kind of time. He and his family spent night after night, weekend after weekend, year after year, running around, going all over the place, ball games, competitions, endless extracurricular events, which I'm not against. I've already told you that. And his family had a lot of fun. But it was only after all that was over that he realized that in all the busyness, he had failed to spend the best type of time with his kids. They'd never really spent much quality time together. And sometimes that quality time, like I said this morning, is maybe just being bored, sit around and talking, not doing anything in particular. So that regret can be a very serious challenge in old age, but we'll talk about later how that regret can be used for good. Another challenge of getting older is, some people say, getting older. They say the worst part of getting old is getting old. What do you think somebody means when they say that? It's like the difficulty of your body getting older, the physical problems that come with aging. When my grandpa Morris was going through the long, prolonged process of dying from kidney failure, we were sitting in his room and he called me over and he whispered to me, "Once a man, twice a child." Has anybody ever heard that phrase before? Once a man, twice a child. Here's what that means. After several decades of being a big, strong man, his body had deteriorated to a point where he had to be cared for like a little child all over again. That's where the saying comes from. Once a man, twice a child. And he didn't say that with any bitterness. He just wanted me to know the reality of old age. Doesn't matter how big and strong you are now, eventually you'll have to be cared for like a child all over again. Or at least that's how it goes if a person gets old enough that they reach that point. In fact, I have noticed, I find this to be really interesting and sad at the same time, the physical problems of old age can become so serious that I have known people who literally moved. They like sold their house and moved to another location so they could be closer to their doctors. Has anybody ever heard of that happening before? That shows a lot about how seriousness health can be as a person gets older. There actually comes a point in life where even the most basic decisions are governed by your physical health. See, I'm at a phase of life I don't think that way at all. I just do what I want to do. But eventually, most people will get to a point in life where their very most basic decisions are governed by the quality of their physical health just for that day. People with chronic illness live this way every day, and eventually all of us will live this way. This is one of the great challenges of getting older. And these endless physical problems, while they're their own challenge, they inevitably give rise to another very serious challenge that every older person eventually has to face. And that is the reality of mortality. Getting older is good, but it can also include a lot of disappointment and heartbreak. Eventually, you realize that you're just not going to live forever, that your family's not going to live forever. Your spouse isn't going to live forever. About 10 years ago, I was talking to Frances Stanley, that's Wade Stanley's grandmother, and she said to me, "I've had such a beautiful life, I wish it didn't have to end." And I don't remember if she said this just before or just after her husband Oscar died. And she wasn't angry, she wasn't afraid, but she was disappointed. She was disappointed realizing that this beautiful life that she had was clearly coming to an end. And again, this is a reality that most people eventually have to face. There are people who can't stand the idea of aging because they can't stand the idea of dying. They would prefer to ignore their own mortality. And I needed to bring up this subject because that's a question we all need to deal with. Does the thought of dying scare you? And if it does, why? It may mean that there is something unresolved in you and something needs to be done. I don't know what that is, but it is possible. If you're afraid of aging and dying, it could mean there is something unresolved that needs your attention. Because, according to the Bible, should we be afraid of aging and dying? Is that something that should be feared? Absolutely not. Especially if you're a Christian. The Bible teaches that we're supposed to get older. Your body is supposed to fail. You're supposed to die. That is how this is supposed to end. Romans chapter 8, verses 20 and 21 explains to us why all of humanity and the entire creation is subjected to the dying process. Romans chapter 8, verses 20 and 21, Paul explains, "For the creation was subjected to futility, not willingly, but because of him who subjected it in hope. Because the creation itself will also be delivered from the bondage of corruption into the glorious liberty of the children of God." You see, when we look forward to our deaths, we can look at it with a sense of hopefulness, not with a sense of failure. And so what the Bible actually teaches on this subject is that mortality is not something that should be feared. It is something that should be faced, and realizing our mortality is good. This is an asset to getting older. Psalm 39, verses 4 and 5, David said, "Lord, make me to know my end, and what is the measure of my days, that I may know how frail I am." You see, that was David's prayer. When we're younger in life, we feel pretty invincible. And David is saying, "God, I need to know that I'm not invincible. I need to know how frail I am." He continues in verse 5, "Indeed, you have made my days as handbreadths, and my age is as nothing before you. Certainly every man at his best state is but a vapor." So that is a challenge, realizing our own mortality. I heard one person say that the worst part of getting old is nobody knows who you are anymore. I admit I'd never thought about that before. But this one particular person said the worst part of getting old is realizing that nobody knows who you are anymore. I thought that was interesting. It wasn't my Grandma Morris who said this, but a story from my grandma made me think about that phrase. My Grandpa Morris, who died of kidney failure, I'm talking about his wife, Jean, if you know her. And I'd called my parents about something. I think I was calling to ask if one of my Grandpa Morris's sisters was still alive. And the answer was no, she's not still alive. And then my mom explained to me that my Grandma Morris is literally the only one left alive of that generation on that side of the family. Her parents are gone, her siblings are gone, all of her in-laws are gone. It's just her. She's it, of that generation. And I think that would be kind of a lonely feeling, actually. You know, everything that she did in life, there's, you know, some of her children who remember those things, but, you know, the memory of her childhood, a lot of that died with all of her friends and family and peers and in-laws, all that. I can imagine that would be sort of a lonely feeling. And like I said, she wasn't the one who said this, but there are many people who have said that the worst part of getting old is that nobody knows who you are anymore. There are people who are afraid of aging and dying partly because they're afraid of being forgotten. And I do want to take a moment to push back on that idea just a little. I've seen people panicking at the end of their lives for fear of people forgetting them. And I don't think that's the spirit of a Christian. Now, I understand this fear. I would not want to be forgotten. That's sort of a sad idea that maybe someday nobody will know who I ever was. So I can appreciate that feeling. And yet, it's not my name that actually matters. The only name that should live in perpetuity in my family and in the church is the name of Jesus Christ. That's it. That's the name that's supposed to live on forever. When you die, and you will, I will too, when you die, you will leave behind a legacy. But what a great disappointment it would be if your legacy was nothing more than a family name or a family farm, family heirlooms, and a record of your personal accomplishments. That actually would be a tremendous failure, wouldn't it be? The only legacy that actually matters, the only legacy that is of any real substance, is the legacy of our faith. And so if when you die, you have left behind a legacy of faith, and your children and your children's children and your community know the name of Jesus Christ, then you've done what you were born to do, and your life was a success. Because that is the name that matters, and that is the only name that must live in perpetuity. Ecclesiastes chapter 9, verses 14 and 15 is a reminder of this reality that we're talking about right now and the potential challenge that faces us when we realize that someday we may be forgotten. Ecclesiastes chapter 9, verses 14 and 15. Solomon said, "This wisdom I have also seen under the sun, and it seemed great to me. There was a little city with few men in it, and a great king came against it, besieged it, and built great snares around it. Now there was found in it a poor wise man, and he by his wisdom delivered the city. Yet no one remembered that same poor man." This is kind of a bittersweet reality. Is anybody going to remember our names 100 years from now? Probably not. I mean, we might show up every once in a while when people are looking through old newspapers or whatever people do, reading through old obituaries. But most likely in 100 years, our name's never going to come up again. But that does not mean that we have failed. As long as we have left behind a legacy of faith and passed on faithfulness to Jesus Christ to our children and our grandchildren and our community, then we've done what we were supposed to do. Our names will be gone, our possessions will be gone, our homes, our vehicles, everything. It'll all be gone. But as long as we have passed on our faith to someone else, we've done what we were supposed to do. So that brings me to the next thing I want to talk about, and that is the opportunities that come with old age. When I look at my notes, I have more written about opportunities for older people than any other phase of life. And I think that's reflective of reality. As you get older, you have more opportunities than you used to have. There is a golden season in life when you have a little money, a little time, and you still have reasonable health. I guess this sort of happens twice. It happens once when you're just out of school, before you have children, and then it happens later at life. And when it happens later in life is different for different people. But you get this new opportunity in life when you get older, like I said, where you have money, you have time, and you still have reasonable health. Not perfect health, but good enough you can do something with this extra time and money. So the very obvious thing to say here is to make sure and use this special opportunity in life to the glory of God while you still can. Because here's what happens to everybody. There will come eventually a season in life when you get old enough where you still have money and you still have time, but you know what you won't have anymore? You won't have that good health anymore. Eventually, that will fade away. After years of battling cancer, Tom Woody said, "I had no idea how good I used to feel." I heard him say that at a meeting somewhere, and that is a really thought-provoking idea, isn't it? I had no idea how good I used to feel. Good health is not guaranteed, and unfortunately, we don't usually totally appreciate it until it's gone. And I was glad to hear him say that, because that helps me to appreciate it a little bit better now, because there'll come a time when I might feel the same way. And this is exactly what Solomon was talking about in Ecclesiastes 12, verse 1. Solomon said, "Remember now your creators in the days of your youth." And when he says that, he doesn't necessarily mean, you know, a teenager, a newly married guy. He means while you still feel good. That's really what he's talking about there. In the days of your youth, while you still have good health, while you still have some energy, before, he says, the difficult days come and the years draw near when you say, "I have no pleasure in them." So this is one of the special opportunities that you may have as you get older. Another great opportunity that I want to share with you as you get older is this. In old age, you are the most qualified to speak about the faithfulness of God. And I hope that you will. As you get older, you are the most qualified to speak about the enduring mercy and grace of God. As you get older, you may feel like there's young people who know more than you about the Bible. You might think that there's young people that can quote more Bible than you and maybe understand some theology better than you. But as you get older, there is nobody who understands the outcome of a Christian life better than you do in your old age. David talked about this in Psalm 37, verse 25. He said, "I have been young, and now I am old, yet I have not seen the righteous forsaken, nor his descendants begging bread." I believe that that's true, but I have never experienced it. I haven't lived to be an old man yet. I can't say that like David said it. And I mean this with absolute respect. Some of you can say it. Some of you have lived long enough in life that you could rightly, from experience, say the same thing. And that is a gift. That's a special opportunity that comes from God when you can speak about the faithfulness of God, when you can talk about the outcome of a Christian life. Over 1,800 years ago in the second century, there was a disciple named Polycarp. He was an elder at Smyrna, and he was being examined prior to his persecution, his execution, and eventually he was executed. But in that trial, the proconsul said to him, he said to Polycarp, "Take the oath and I let you go. Just revile Christ." Polycarp replied, "For 86 years I have been his servant and he has done me no wrong. How then can I blaspheme my king who saved me?" That is the attitude of a person who has lived a long life and seen the faithfulness of Christ. And this relates to the next opportunity I wanted to share. As you get older, you have accumulated wisdom that only comes by experience. Solomon said, "The glory of young men is their strength, and the splendor of old men is their gray head." As you get older, you've been through some hard times. You have done things that the rest of us have not done. Many of you, as you have gotten older, you've watched your mom and your dad die. Maybe you've buried some of your own children. You've seen your adult children make good decisions, and maybe you've seen your adult children make terrible decisions. You've walked the halls of hospital rooms waiting for your husband or wife who was in surgery, or maybe children or grandchildren who were in surgery. You have watched other people succeed and fail. You've had your own successes and failures. You've seen how one decision can cause a cascade of consequences that continues for an entire lifetime. See, you know these things that younger people don't know yet. And that is why I love when old people, and I mean that in a respectful way, I love when old people give me advice. Because I know that you know things that I don't know yet. So please share your advice with us. Share your wisdom with us. This was probably 5 or 6 years ago. I thought maybe I wanted to be a cattle farmer. And I was running my plan by Charlie Bice over at Summersville. And I was telling him my big plan to make a bunch of money buying cheap cows. Charlie gave me some advice. He said, "Never buy a cow from the sale barn. If it was that great, it wouldn't be at the sale barn." And I always thought that was pretty interesting advice. Apparently, a lot of people do just fine buying and selling at the sale barn. But that was his experience. He'd been burned before, and he was sharing with me something he'd learned by his own failures. And I very much respect that and appreciate it. I love when old people come to me and tell me about their life experiences and what went right and what went wrong. But here's something else I've noticed. I've also noticed that many old people don't want to do that, don't want to share these experiences. And why do you think that is? Yeah, so some of it is embarrassment. Some of it is embarrassment. And here's the other big one. They don't think us young people are listening anyway. So here's my advice to older people who may feel that way. Tell us anyway. Even if you think we're not listening, even if you think we're being stubborn and proud, just tell us anyway. Because maybe there'll come a day when we remember what you told us and we'll learn from it. Because if you don't teach us, you are in fact condemning us to suffer through the same mistakes that you made. And I speak on behalf of all youngish people that we would rather not do that. I would rather get your advice. I would rather learn from your successes and failures. As you get older, you can think about it like this. If the teenage years are a long and difficult transition from childhood into adulthood, then these later years in life are a long and difficult transition from mortality into glory. 2 Corinthians 4, verses 16 through 18, Paul said, "Therefore we do not lose heart, even though our outward man is perishing, yet the inward man is being renewed day by day. For our light affliction, which is but for a moment, is working for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory." He says in verse 18, "We do not look at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporary, but the things which are not seen are eternal." I think it's only as you get older in life that you really appreciate the meaning of this passage. It's as your physical life begins to fail that physical things become less interesting to you. And as your body fades away, you start to think more about the parts of you that are going to live forever. This is a gift. This is an opportunity to have that perspective on life. And God wants us to realize this. That's why David said in Psalm 90, verses 10 through 12, Psalm 90, verses 10 through 12, "The days of our lives are 70 years, and if by reason of strength they are 80 years, yet their boast is only labor and sorrow, for it is soon cut off, and we fly away. Who knows the power of your anger? For as the fear of you, so is your wrath." So he says in verse 12, "So teach us to number our days, that we may gain a heart of wisdom." And that's a good thought, isn't it? Once a person realizes their mortality, they have gained a level of knowledge that the rest of us are lacking. As we conclude, I want to give you a little parable. A few years ago, I was sitting in a deer stand, and I was just enjoying the beauty of the woods. And an interesting thought occurred to me, and it's funny how little things in life sort of stick with you. I think about it quite often now. It was fall. I was deer hunting. I think I was up on my in-law's place, and the trees were all starting to change into their autumn colors, and it was really beautiful. Sumac is not a tree, but it's the first one to change. If you've ever noticed aromatic sumac, it's the one that you see on the roadsides that just turns vivid red, fluorescent red. It almost seems unnatural. The oaks were changing. They changed to all shades of red and orange. But I do have a favorite. You can't have favorite kids, but you can have favorite trees. My favorite is the hickories. Because just for a few days, under the right circumstances, a hickory tree will glow with yellow. It's the most incredible thing to see when the sun is shining on it. But then what happens to all that beauty? They all turn brown. They fall to the ground and return to the soil. And it just sort of struck me when I realized that all this beauty of this season eventually goes away. But then the next year, the same tree will bud with new leaves. They serve their purpose for a season. They glow with color in the fall. And they too eventually turn brown. They fall to the ground and return to the soil. And I just thought this is a really interesting parable for the Christian life. I'm kind of like one leaf on a tree. This is what I was thinking about while I'm sitting in a deer stand. I'm kind of like one leaf on a tree. I'm not even the whole tree. I'm just one leaf on the tree. and I get to live for just a few short seasons. There's been thousands before me. There's going to be thousands after me. But I have a job right now, and this is my season to give glory to God. And eventually it comes to an end. And after I'm long gone and nobody remembers me anymore, the tree will still be there. It'll still be beautiful. But I'm just one leaf right now in this season to bring beauty and honor to God. And if I do that, then I've done my job. Then I've done my job, and we can pass on happily into eternity. 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 24 through 25. All flesh is as grass, and the glory of man as the flower of the grass. The grass withers and its flower fades away, but the word of the Lord endures forever. This is the word by which the gospel was preached to you. Thank you for giving me a chance to speak to you today. Appreciate the chance to give an extra lesson, and hope I gave you something that was valuable. We'll stand and sing the closing number.